Welcome to Bookmakers, original podcast brought to you by your friends at TalkStream Radio and ARIA, the Association of Rhode Island Authors. Bookmakers will bring you the best, newest, and most original works from some of today's top writers. Today, Bookmakers is pleased to present author Marcus Mitchell. Hear of lacking leadership across the nation in families, businesses, politics, and our society. On March 25th through the 31st, a local community advocate and president owner of Share Strategy Enterprises, Marcus Mitchell, is launching a series of books on leadership available at Amazon.com, Kindle, and local bookstores. Marcus Mitchell is a local author from Providence's East Side who serves on numerous boards, including Providence Community Library, where he is co-founder and founding president, the Miriam Hospital Board of Governors, Providence Rotary, and Esther's Well, a housing and counseling group supporting women trafficking victims and their children, and numerous other organizations continuing his obligation to community service. Welcome to the show, Marcus. We're so glad to have you join us today. So, Leadership Secrets of the 10% Club, right in the heart. Love the title. Tell us about your book.
Well, thank you, Diane, for having me today, and it's my pleasure to be here. Leadership Secrets of the 10% Club, right in the heart, is the first book in my series designed for anyone currently or potentially seeking a leadership role in any organization. It offers tips while focusing on the qualities of character and personal motivations inherent in good leaders. I used techniques, experiences, and personal anecdotes drawn from years in the corporate arena, emergency medicine, federal government positions, scientific research, and community advocacy. And those anecdotes are included throughout the book.
Sounds very interesting. What inspired you to write this book?
Oh, Diane, the message these days too often is a negative one based on materialism and self-gratification with no loyalty or compassion. These are messages our society is conveying to our children, the next generation of leaders. And then we wonder why we have an Enron or Bernie Madoff and our collapsing communities. I hope that these books will help emerging and seasoned leaders, but also alert everyone of the qualities to look for in our leaders around us and that we might choose.
You say other books. Can you tell us about the other books in the series?
Yes, there are three other books, and they're due to be released in the fall of 2014. The next one is Leadership Secrets for Anyone, Anywhere, Anytime. And this offers tips for leading at any level in any organization or group of people, family, work, volunteer, school, church, or the community. Then there's Leadership Secrets, Aut Inventium Vium Aut Fasium, Critical Thinking, Problem Solving, and Crisis Management. This is a quote in Latin I've held close and lived by most of my life. I shall find a way or make one. And it's attributed to Hannibal's comments before crossing the Alps with elephants. And good critical thinking and practical problem solving skills are invaluable to a good leader's ability to overcome seemingly impossible obstacles. And lastly, the geometric cognition paradigm. That's the trademark product of my solution strategy firm, Share Strategy Enterprises, LLC. It is a methodology identifying the critical path to success for any effort, limiting wasted time, wasted money, and optimizing available resources directed to dramatically increasing the probability of success.
Excellent. Would you possibly read a passage from your book for us?
Oh, I'd love to read a passage. I'll choose a passage that speaks to a leadership experience. I have never been one to sit back and complain from an armchair in my living room. I have to get out in the field, look for myself, and do my part. During my tenure as a director of community and economic development with the United States Senate, I took the opportunity to examine a social problem that I wanted to make an impact on, homelessness. Once I took an interest, I started to use the resources of the office to examine and research. There were a multitude of agencies and nonprofits that addressed the issue in local communities. Many of them received federal funding in the form of grants. These grants and funding created some agencies that evolved into having multi-million dollar budgets. In my interest, I began to try to examine and discover for myself how effective these agencies were at addressing the issue of homelessness. During my initial investigation, I noticed one small agency had a very small budget, but were managing to service more people than anyone else. My curiosity was piqued. I had to see if this agency was for real, and if so, what they were doing that was successful. If they really were not successful, I wanted to know that. As with any government-funded group effort, it can happen more often than not that unscrupulous individuals will try to take advantage of the situation and exploit other people. Thus, I was keen to investigate. So I decided I was going to spend the weekend at this particular homeless shelter. I notified my office of my intentions and changed my suit into some street clothes that I used for gardening. I bid my farewells to my colleagues in the office and made my way on foot to the shelter. Once at the shelter, I checked in at the intake office. I found it to be a very humane operation. I had expected humiliating behavior, but that is not what I experienced. The staff treated me with nothing less than dignity and compassion. I was allowed to take a shower and had dinner. There were hundreds of homeless men in the shelter, as it was August, in the middle of a heat wave. I was brought to a room where there were rows of bunk beds in an upper open space, and heat was sweltering. I could hear a fan blowing, but I did not feel it as the air was circulating at all. That first night, I was lying on my bunk, making my notes mentally on the operation. A man about my age, lying in the bunk next to me, began to talk to me. For the purpose of this story, let's call him John. John began to tell me his story, sharing the details of his situation with me. To this day, I am not exactly sure why he decided to talk with me as opposed to someone else. I suppose to him, I looked like someone who would listen. John had been a skilled carpenter, and he once had his own thriving business. He told me he had developed a substance abuse issue, a combination of both drinking and drugs. As he told me his story, tears were in his eyes, and to this day I will never forget the expression on his face. He said he never dreamed he would be in this place at this point in his life, or that things would get to be this bad for him. He told me that the only thing he wanted to do was to get his wife back, whom he had lost in his downward spiral of addiction. He said he wanted to get his job back, reconcile with his wife, and rebuild their life together. Unaware that he was talking to a department head connected with the U.S. Senate, he poured his heart out about the tragedy of his life. I thought to myself, lying there in that August night, that I really wanted to do something to help this man. The next morning, we had a chance to use the bathroom and wash ourselves at the sink. There was a line of people formed, waiting to use them. As the line moved, I got closer to the front of the line. I saw that there was one man using three sinks while scores of people waited. I stepped forward to use one of the sinks, and he turned on me. He wanted to fight, and my initial impulse was that I would fight with him, and my intention mounted with the desire to beat him senseless. I was appalled at his selfishness. As I stood my ground nose to nose with this man, berating him for keeping others waiting in line, another very tall man stepped out of the line and walked toward me. At first, I thought I might have to fight two people, but the tall man looked at me, placed his hand gently on my shoulder, and said four words to me that I will always remember. "Humble is the way." That's all he said, but it was enough to remind me of the real reason I was there, to help people. I lost my head for a moment because the man using three sinks was so inconsiderate of everyone else that I was determined to call him out on his rude behavior. However, the tall man's words were spoken to my soul. I nodded to him and quietly got back in line. Later, when we went to eat, no one sat with me. I began to wonder if people could tell that I was not homeless. I later asked someone why no one sat with me. This man told me it was because they didn't know me. So I realized they were no different than any other group of people. They congregate with the people they know. I finished my day and left the shelter, completing my observations of this organization. The following night, after I returned home, I began to think about my experience and how I was going to help the organization as well as the man John, who had told me his story. The organization, I discovered, could do this incredible amount of work to help more people than anyone else with less money simply because they used sincere and honest volunteers to help do the work. There were only five people on staff who were paid, and the rest of the workers were volunteers. I found this both incredible and inspiring. Upon returning to my office on Monday morning, and began to make preparations to help this organization. Ironically, on my calendar was an appointment to meet with a man who wanted to start a training program for homeless men and women to help them learn building trades and rehabilitate houses. I told him my experiences from the weekend and my encounter with John. I asked him if he would come with me to the shelter so that he could give John a job. After hearing my story, he was just as excited as I was to do this for this man. Together we went to the shelter, and when we arrived, I asked to speak with the executive director. At the door of his office, he peered at me over the rim of his glasses. I told him I was working out of an office with the United States Senate, and also that I had spent the weekend undercover at the shelter. I let him know how impressed I was with the work he and his colleagues were doing to help so many people, and that I was going to help him with the aid of the federal government. I also told him I was looking for John, relaying the story, and let him know that the man with me was going to give him a job. The executive director left the office to have some of his staff go search for John. We waited for 30 minutes until he returned and said that he could not find him in the system. He explained to me that the nature of their work is that people come and go. John apparently had left the facility, and when or if he would return was unknown. That day, I was not able to find John, but over the years, I have continued looking. The staff of the organization was so incredulous that I had spent the weekend at their facility that they asked me to speak at their annual meeting and relate my experiences. The board members said they were embarrassed that somebody from outside their organization would take it upon himself to stay in their facility to get an intimate view and understand what their clients had to experience. After my undercover experiment, the board instituted a policy that all board members now had to spend time in the shelter themselves to experience, just as I did. I believe that's a good policy for any organization. The first-hand experience of putting yourself in the same situation of people that you're trying to help gives some small measure of what they have to endure. It's hard to imagine what it must be like for someone to live without a home for years, trying to find a meal or trying to find a job. It's hard to imagine trying to put one's life back together again when one has lost everything. My investigation inspired the board to take a closer look and make a bigger effort to understand the value of the work that they were doing. My hat goes off to those men and women who work at shelters for a living. They are truly a special group of people. When one is in the role of leadership, sometimes it is necessary to have courage and go forward to look and experience the organization from the inside. Not everyone is willing to take such a risk. However, if one is going to lead, it is important to know how the organization is running, and sometimes it does require that one find out what is really going on. Going undercover is a great way for a leader to see an organization from the inside out.
Wow, amazing. What an inspiring story and experience. I know the book launch is scheduled for March 25th. Through the 31st. Marcus Mitchell will be showcasing his book locally March 25th through the 31st with book signings and selected readings from the book. Marcus will be at Knight Memorial Library on March 26th from 6 p.m. to 7:30, Rochambeau Library on March 31st from 6 to 8 p.m., and at Mount Pleasant Library on March 25th. Marcus, you have a diverse field of experience and a wealth of community development and policy expertise. You're the founder and principal executive of Share Strategy Enterprises, LLC. Your website is Share, Share-Enterprises.com, a strategic solutions company with focus areas in crisis management, small business startups, and conflict resolution. Author of Leadership Secrets of the 10% Club, Right in the Heart. Marcus, thank you so much for what you're doing and for joining us.
Thank you, Diane. Thank you for having me.
You have been listening to Bookmakers, an original series brought to you by ARIA, the Association of Rhode Island Authors, and TalkStream Radio, produced by Massimo Productions. For more information about this and many other authors, visit www.riauthors.org. Join us again on Bookmakers when we bring you more behind-the-scenes stories from writers and their latest work. Thank you for joining us.